California.
I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank my friend Jim for asking me to come up here and participate at the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, Second Traditions group. It's an honor and a privilege to be here, and it was good having dinner with some friends tonight, Mike and Bruce and the folks that were at the restaurant, and lovely fiance of Jim, Sheila. And it's just good to come up here. I have a lot of friends up here. By the time this talk's over, they'll be cut in half, but that's okay. But I'm not only an alcoholic, I got to tell you, I'm an abuser of Preparation H. I just want to be an alcoholic and something, since so many people are today. I'm an alcoholic and an abuser of Preparation H. And it's okay, it works for me. And But I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm glad that I stuck around long enough to find out that Alcoholics Anonymous, if I put an effort into AA and these 12 steps and a sponsor, that I'll be able to walk outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and be relatively comfortable most of the time. All I came to Alcoholics Anonymous for was to get a quiet head and a calm stomach, and that's what I've got out of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you that I didn't want to be here, really. I didn't know what AA was. I sat in the back. I didn't pay attention when they read Chapter 5. I didn't listen to the 12 traditions. These things had nothing to do with me. These 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says I'm powerless over alcohol. I could outdrink everybody I knew. And then it says my life's unmanageable. And I not only managed my life, I managed everybody's life around me. So that first step didn't pertain to me. The second step says I'm going to be restored to some type of sanity. And when I came to the AA meetings, all I did is look around at you and knew that you had a problem with sanity. I didn't. So that step didn't pertain to me. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't believe in God. I'd done too many bad things to too many people, and so I didn't believe in God. So I couldn't turn my will and life over to care of God as I understand God. I didn't have a God. I'm never going to write an inventory. Why am I going to put that crap down on paper so somebody can get it and use it against me? And so I can't write that stuff down, and that's what my head said is, yeah, I'm not going to write that. That's crazy. I won't have to do that. And therefore, I won't have to do a fifth step because I'm not going to read it to anybody because it ain't going to be written down. Sixth step and seventh step says that I've got defects of character and shortcomings. Not on your life. No, I don't. You folks do, but I don't. I was raised right. I got principles and morals. That's right. Eighth step says that I'm going to make a list of people I had harmed and become willing to make amends. No, I'm not. I didn't harm anybody that didn't deserve it. If that guy in the bar hadn't said that, I wouldn't have hit him in the mouth with a glass ashtray. Is it my fault that he don't know how to communicate with people? No, it's his fault. He needs to learn that. If I end up with your wife or girlfriend, is that my fault? If you can't take care of them, that's your fault. That's your problem. That ain't mine. You leave your wallet or money out, I'm taking it because I figure you don't care about it anyway. So I don't have to do any of that stuff because I don't feel bad about any of it. And then it says I'm going to make direct amends wherever possible except when to do so would harm them or others. And since I'm not going to make amends, that step don't apply. Tenth step says that I'm going to take my inventory every day and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. I'm not wrong. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a victim. So that 10th step, and now I'm not trying to offend anybody, but I'm just telling you the truth. The 11th step says that through prayer and meditation, I'm going to improve my conscious contact with God. I don't believe in God. And to this day, 24 years, 9 months, and change sober, I cannot meditate today. Meditating is getting one with the world. Clearing your mind and getting one with God. When I get quiet by myself and close my eyes, I think about naked women. I'm not trying to be funny, and if any of you guys sitting out there don't do that, you are shucking and jiving yourself, okay? I'm not trying to be funny. I am serious. And then I think about armored cars, robbing them, taking the women to the Bahamas. And so today I have a hard time meditating. I get on my knees every night and thank God for my sobriety and for a good day. And every morning I get on my knees regardless of where I'm at and ask God to give me the strength and guidance to stay sober that day and have His will done. But I cannot meditate and get quiet and one with the world. And I'm just being honest with you. And the 12th step says that as a result of working those other 11, which I'm not working, I'm going to have a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience, and then I'm going to help the alcoholic that still suffers. I do not care about the alcoholic that still suffers. Now, that's how I was when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not understand those 12 steps, and to me, that's what they meant, but I'm glad I stuck around long enough to find out that if I apply them in my life, and I do that inventory, read that inventory to my sponsor, talk about my defects of character and shortcomings, I will have an opportunity to change and not act the way I used to act and do the things I used to do. Therefore, I can stay comfortable and sober. I have a sponsor today. I call my sponsor Monday through Friday. It doesn't make any difference whether I got a crisis in my life or not. I call my sponsor Monday through Friday. Now, I don't want to do that because I'm busy. I have a life today. I hear newcomers tell me, well, we come to AA to get a life, so why do I got to do all that stuff now? Well, I don't care if you do it or not. We'll see you when you get back. That's my answer to them. But I call my sponsor Monday through Friday because when I pick the phone up and I dial his number and I hear his voice on the other end of that phone, I feel better. I can't explain it to you. I don't know why I feel better, but I'm telling you the truth. When I hear my sponsor's voice, I feel better. So that's why I call him Monday through Friday. It makes me feel better. I don't want to always go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. These are a pain in the butt. Right in the middle of the night, right when all the good TV stuff is on, I have to be at an AA meeting. I don't always want to go. Sometimes I may be tired. I was never too tired to drink. I was never too tired to go out into bars and show my ass, but I'm too tired to come to an AA meeting. But something funny happens when I just get in the car anyway and drive to that meeting, talk to the people before the meeting, listen to Chapter 5, listen to the participation of the speaker, hear the 12 traditions, talk to people at the break and after the meeting, I always feel better. I can't explain that to you. I don't know why, but when I leave a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I feel better. That's why I go to meetings. That's why I work these steps. That's why I call my sponsor. That's why I do the things I do, because they all make me feel better. And by feeling better, I don't mean giddy and happy, because I am not a giddy, happy person, okay? It quiets my head down. It calms my stomach down. That's why I do it. I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, look at me. I don't look like an alcoholic. I don't look like an alcoholic. Look at the people sitting around you. Now, these people look like alcoholics. Holy cow. Get a life, folks. We're here to improve. Every time I come up here, Jim, this group brings the worst out in me. It's not like this at any other meeting. I have no reason for being an alcoholic. It's not my parents' fault. My parents were married to each other 50 years. They provided a good home for me to grow up in. I was born in Danville, Illinois. I had a great childhood. I played sports. I won 9 letters in high school. I had offers to go to college and play basketball. They were willing to pay my way to go to college and play basketball for them. And that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I did that inventory when I come in here. I read it to my sponsor, talked about my defects of character and shortcomings, and looking back over my life, I don't analyze my childhood. I am not searching for an inner child, okay? And put a little teddy bear in a backpack and walk around the meetings looking like a dippy. If I ever find my inner child, I will choke him unconscious. He has caused me more problems. I've been trying to grow up for 61 years, and I've had no success whatsoever. I've had a childhood that's lasted for decades. So I'm not one of those. So I just growing up as a kid, I was a liar and a cheat. I lied because it's easier to lie than it is to tell the truth when you lie. I've been an airline pilot. I don't know about you, but I have. I've been a truck driver. I've been a dentist. I've been a gynecologist, okay? I can help you, ladies. All right? When you lie, you can be anything you want to be. When you tell the truth, it's just out there. And so I lied all the time, and my parents never taught me that. And I cheated because I don't want to work hard and earn anything. I'm lazy. Give me, lend me, can I have, let me borrow. That's me. That's all, and I'm a thief. I steal because it's easier to steal something than it is to stand in line and pay for it. And when you leave the store, you got the item and your money, you're a double winner. There you go. You're ahead of the game right there. And, so that's how it was growing up. But I didn't analyze that or think about it. I did that because that's what kids did. And, you know, I wanted to be macho growing up. I wanted to be a tough guy. I've always wanted to be a macho guy. And I look like Mr. Peepers. I hated it. I feel like a wimp. And then I was afraid of the dark. I couldn't tell anybody about that. Macho guys ain't afraid of the dark. There's nobody in San Jose afraid of the dark. Except me. I am. And that's how I was before I ever drank alcohol, folks. I felt like a wimp, a wussy. I felt inadequate. I was a cheat and a liar. And so I felt guilty, and I hadn't even taken a drink yet. My first drink was Slow Gin and 7-Up. I was at a party in Danville with all the ball players and our girlfriends, and this big iced tea glass with red stuff in it. And I took a drink, and it tastes like strawberry Kool-Aid. And so I chug-a-lugged it down. That's my drink of choice. And nothing happened. It wasn't a big deal. I didn't get 6 feet four, 240 pounds, and have my pimples fall off. I hear that from guys at the podium. It made me get big. No, it didn't. I drank it down, gave her the glass, said, get me another one. She brought another one. I drank that. I didn't put a bottle of wine in a paper bag and throw on a wrinkled trench coat and head to Skid Row. I didn't talk to my high school counselor saying, you know, someday I want to be an alcoholic, so I can go up to San Jose and speak. It just ruined my whole weekend. And I didn't do that. I wasn't drinking for the taste, the effect of what alcohol was doing to me or for me or any of the things I've heard at these podiums. I was drinking for one reason and one reason only. All my buddies at that party were drinking. All those guys were drinking and having a good time. They were hugging and munching their girlfriend. They were dancing and laughing. And I can't do those things because I'm self-centered. I'm self-conscious. And it's into me. And I don't want to ask you to dance because I don't know how. And then I'll be made fun of. And I don't want to talk to you. You'll think I'm stupid. And so I thought if I drank like those guys drank, I could have the fun they're having. And that's why I drank. I drank almost a gallon of Slow Gin in 30 minutes. Nothing happened. No, it wasn't no big deal. 20 minutes after I drank that last glass, I found out where Slow Gin got its name. It very slowly got me drunk, and I went into a blackout. I got taken home that night, and I passed out. The next morning, I come to, and I'm puking red stuff up all over the bedroom. I'm puking up everything I had eaten and drank. I'm sicker than a dog. I have a head pounding, an upset stomach, and I can't remember how I got home that night. I didn't know what a blackout was. I didn't know until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and the old-timers told me a blackout is when I consume alcohol, I go out and do whatever it is I'm going to do that night, but the next morning I'll have amnesia about all or parts of that night. That's an indication I have a problem drinking. I didn't know that. I didn't know that normal drinkers do not have blackouts. I didn't know that. I found that out in AA, and I look over my drinking, and I blacked out from the first time I drank, and I used to go to parties and movies and stuff with a wife or girlfriend, and the next morning they'd tell me about it, and I had no recollection of going to those things. And then I'd go in a bar, and I'd be drinking, and I'd get ready to leave, and then I can't find my car, and so I go in and report it stolen, and the police come, and we walk out, and the car's parked there, and I say, well, I guess they brought it back. And they look at me funny, and then I wake up in a room, and it's dark, and I don't know where I'm at, and there's something in bed with me, and I don't know what the hell this thing is. You know, the hair's all matted down on it. It should have been tagged by the Humane Society. This thing is a beast. It will hurt me if it wakes up. I have got to get the hell out of there wherever I'm at. Those are blackouts. Those are indication I had a problem drinking, and I missed 3 days of school with a terrible hangover, and I went back to school, and the guys told me about that night. They said I was dancing and laughing and funny, and some guy said something, and I punched his ticket, and when they told me about that night, I felt a part of them. I felt a part of the guys. I don't remember any of it, but I thought it was cool. And from that night to tonight, I don't drink 7-Up anymore. This is the only disease in the world that will kill you, and your head will always blame something else when you have problems. I blamed the 7-Up that night. I didn't blame the Slow Gin, and I don't drink 7-Up anymore. That's all. This is the only disease in the world that's killing you, and your head will always blame something else. Now, I didn't turn into a blazing alcoholic after that and get the shakes and study hall when I didn't drink. I drank when I could get it. When I drank, I got drunk. When I drank, I got in fights because I'm afraid. I'm full of fear. I have to keep you away from me so you don't find that out about me. I don't want you to know I feel like a wimp. And so I drink and I fight and I steal and I raise hell and I get in trouble. And that's what drinking was doing, but it was all part of having fun as a kid. 2 weeks before I'm supposed to graduate from high school, I have this scholarship to play basketball at this university, and I have a committee in my head now. And my committee's talking to me, and my committee says, what if you go to that college and you don't make the basketball team? You're going to look bad. Well, that scared me. And then my head says, what if you go and don't get grades good enough to stay on the basketball team? And that scared me. I don't want to go to college and look bad. I don't want to go to college and look like a wimp. I don't want to go to college and look like a dummy. And so I made a keen alcoholic decision. I quit high school. It made sense to me at the time. You can't go to college on a scholarship if you don't graduate. And so I quit high school. And then 2 weeks later, I'm drinking with the guys, and I had another keen alcoholic thought. I joined the Marine Corps. If you're a wimp and a wussy and afraid of the dark, do not go in the Marine Corps. Join the Air Force. That's all. I didn't know that then. I should have went in the Navy. And so I found myself on a train going up to Chicago to get sworn in, and I'm full of a fear because I'm going to the big city, and I'm homesick, and I'm lonely, and I'm sitting next to this guy on a train. He's got on a black leather jacket and a ducktail haircut and long sideburns, and he's drinking out of a little brown bottle, and I want to hang out with him in Chicago. And so he's drinking. He said, hey, do you want a drink of this? He's going into the Marine Corps, too. And I said, yeah, I'll take a drink. And I took that bottle, and I turned it up, and I chugged on two or three big mouthfuls of it, and it was whiskey. Now, I don't know how you drank whiskey at the age of 17, but I'll tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. And I got whiskey coming out my nose. I got my eyes watering, and this guy's looking at me funny, and I felt like a wimp. And so I wiped off my face. I handed him the bottle, and I said, that stuff's pretty good. He said, do you want another drink? And I said, not now. I can't even breathe. Having a hard time catching my breath. And that's why I drank. I drank to fit in and be a part of. I got sworn in. I ended up down at Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. Went through boot camp scared. Went through boot camp homesick, and I put a facade out there and acted like what I thought a man should act like. And I got through boot camp, and the Cuban crisis happened in October 62, and we went in a convoy down the coast and through the Panama Canal, and we did that deal, and nothing happened there, and I'm scared to death we're going to war, and I can't tell anybody about it, so that makes me feel bad. And we go back through the Panama Canal and go to the Far East for 13 months. First night there, we unpack our gear, and the guy said, hey, Frank, we're going out and get drunk. You want to go with us? And I said, yeah, and I felt a part of the guys. I'm going out with the guys and get drunk in the Ville. This is cool for a 17-year-old. We go out in the Ville. We bought a Typhoon Fifth of sake. It cost us 75 cents. We're passing that bottle of sake around, and these Marines are doing the male bonding ritual that guys do. They're punching each other and hugging and shit. They're all cool and macho. That bottle got to me, and I chug-a-lugged some of it, and I don't know how you drank sake at the age of 17. But I'll tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over their shoes, and I had sake coming out my nose, my eyes are watering, and these guys are laughing at me and pointing at me, and I hated that. I hated that feeling of being a wimp. And they're laughing, and I drank some more, and I puked it up, and they're laughing at me, and I learned something that night. I learned that if you're going to be an alcoholic, you can't let looking bad bother you. You have got to hang in, folks, and we hung in. I think that's important. And, I finally held enough sake down that something funny happened. And I don't know what alcohol did for you, but I'll tell you what alcohol did for me every time. I held enough sake down, and I looked at those five or six Marines I was drinking with, and I realized something. These guys are punks. Why am I hanging out with these sissies? You see, when I drank, I didn't need anybody. When I drank, I became all I could be. I became an army of one. And I went out drinking on my own. I left those punks. And I'm drinking in this bar, and I'm shooting pool with a Marine from another unit. He said something I evidently took offense to because I hit him in the face with a pool cue. Now, in the movies, it looked cool, okay? In reality, they're calling EMPs. I'm going to the brig. I'm scared. I shouldn't have done that. He's laying there bleeding. I feel bad. I got to get the hell out of there. I don't want to go to the brig. And so I run out of that bar, and I run down through the alleys in Anoco, and I go in another bar. I'm sitting in that bar drinking shooters and chasing it with beer, and something funny happens. The fear I had about going to the brig and feeling bad about hitting that other Marine disappears. I don't feel bad no more. I figure if the MPs walk in, they're not going to take me alive. We're going to fight it out. That's it. That's what alcohol does for me. I don't care about responsibility. I don't care about being mature. I don't care about being an adult. I don't care whose life I walk through or who I hurt. I don't care about paying bills. I don't care about anything when I drink except me. I am the mighty I am. I am self-obsessed, self-centered. I am consumed with me, and that's what alcohol allows me to be. And then I'm sitting in there drinking. I look down at the end of the bar, and there's a Nason sitting there. I'm a sucker for a pretty face. Women have been able to soak me for every dime I've got all my life. It's just sad. She slid up next to me and asked me to buy her a drink, and I'm a nice guy, and so I bought the young lady a drink. And then she starts telling me this sad story about her mom that needs surgery. And you're not her, are you? Prostitutes have moms. Their moms might have problems. And so I gave her some money for her sick mom, and her and I trudged the road of happy destiny to her hooch. I'd like to stand here tonight and tell you we had such a great time, she probably still remembers it to this day. It was over too quick for me to remember it. And that embarrassed me and hurt my little macho ego and my little chinchy attitude, and I was ashamed. And when she went to clean up, I stole my money out of her headboard and set her house on fire. It just made sense at the time, that's all. And so I split from there, and I went back to the base, and I passed out. And at Reveille the next morning, I come to, and my head's pounding, my stomach's upset, and I'm puking up everything I'd eat and drink that night. And I'm just sicker than a dog, and I have no recollection of what went on in town that night. I didn't remember a doggone thing. And I'm in the head throwing up, and the guys are telling me the MPs are looking for who hit that guy. And now I feel bad again, and I have that fear of going to the brig. And then they told me about the fire in the Ville. And you see, my dad hadn't raised me to act that way. I don't know where those actions came from. I was ashamed of that. I felt a lot of guilt over that. I didn't know how I was going to make that right. I opened up my locker that morning, and there's a bottle in there with a big red dot on it, and that's called Akadama wine. And I took that bottle of wine down that morning and unscrewed the cap and drank some of it, and I didn't puke it up, and I drank some more of it, and it put the fire out. And I went out to formation, and by the time the formation was over and I come back in the barracks, my headache was gone. My stomach had settled down. I wasn't sick no more. I didn't have a hangover. Now, what that tells me is if I drink in the morning, I don't have to be sick. I went back to my locker, got that bottle of wine out, poured it in a canteen cup, and drank some more. 20 minutes later, I'm bragging about hitting that guy with a pool cue. I'm bragging about setting that woman's house on fire. You see, when I drink, I don't care about responsibility. I don't care about picking a tab up when I'm drinking. I don't care about anything but me. I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze and women in the bars. And I became a bar fighter, and I developed a technique of ambush. I got in trouble. And even in 1963, the Marine Corps frowns on those actions, and I'd make a stripe, they took it away from me. Then they'd restrict me to my base and then the barracks. And then if you'd have walked up to me and said, you know what, Frank, every time you drink, you get in some type of trouble. I could have given you reasons why that's not true. You see, if that guy in the bar hadn't have said that, I wouldn't have hit him in the head with a bottle of beer. The duty NCO hadn't have told me to shut up and hit the rack, I wouldn't have smacked the duty NCO. He needs to learn how to talk to people. That ain't no way to talk to somebody. And so I could blame everybody and everything for all my problems till I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the old-timers in my home group snapped me up and said, if you want to see what the problem is in your life, Slim, go look in the mirror. The 12 steps in that big book are made for you to work, not the people around you. Your wife don't have to work this program. Your kids don't have to work this program. Your boss don't have to work this program. You have to work this program. You have to change and become different. I didn't know that. I didn't have a clue. I was a victim when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous until I found out I am responsible for my actions. Nobody ever held a gun to my head and made me do the things I did. I did them on my own free will and my own volition. Nobody ever forced me to do any of the things I ever did. And alcohol is not an excuse. I did them. And what happened was I ended up beating a cab driver with a rock over one day and beat his face in because I perceived their meters were fixed to rip us servicemen off. And they put me in the brig. And then I was facing a lot of time, and my dad flew to Okinawa, and he met with a commanding general, and I begged the Marine Corps not to throw me out. I was 18-year-old, and he paid for the guy's surgery and paid for his retirement, gave that cab company some money, and some deal was cut somewhere. And after my court-martial, By the time paperwork went through to get me released from that brig, I had spent 337 days locked up there. If you'd have told me that was behind trying to get money to drink on, I could have given you 100 reasons why that ain't true. This is the only disease in the world that will start killing you in your head. We'll always blame something else. I ended up getting sent to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and I went through Illinois on my way down there and met a girl out of high school. Her and I got married, took her to North Carolina with me. She wants me to stay home and be a husband. I can't do that. I'm a bar drinker. I like the intelligent guys and the beautiful women. I have to get out there. And so I don't know what you guys would do, but I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd start a fight with her and make it look like it's her fault. And then her and I are having that cuss fight that alcoholics have, and now I can't drink in a noisy place. And it's her fault that I'm not there because she won't shut up, so I go out in the bars and drink, and that gives me a reason to go drinking in the bars. And then some guy will say something, I'll hit him with something, I'll call the Jacksonville police, and I'd go in another bar, and I got to be validated because I don't feel like a man, and that's what guys like me do when they don't feel like a man. They got to have another woman so they feel like a man. And I lock eyes with some honey, and her and I trudge the road of happy destiny to her place. And then I'm laying in her bed sobering up, and I start to think, and you should never drink and think. That is a bad deal. And then I start having those feelings that you have when you're a liar, because I'm a liar. I start having those feelings of guilt that you have when you're unfaithful. And I can't go home and look at that woman now. And so I stop and have a couple of shooters and a beer, and I walk in the house, and she says, "Where have you been?" Now, I hate that question. Now I got to lie to her. See, I wouldn't be a liar if she didn't ask that question. So it ain't my fault I'm lying, it's her fault. She shouldn't ask that damn question. Then we have another cuss fight. And I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is my wife is none of my business. It's not my job to tell her what to do. It ain't my job to tell her how to clean the house or what to cook for dinner or what to wear. My sponsor told me when I got here, if I don't like what my wife cooks for dinner, to cook my own damn dinner and shut my mouth about it. My sponsor told me if I don't like how that house looks, clean up myself and never say nothing to her. She doesn't seem to have a problem with it. I do. And he said, "You clean your house yourself then, but never say anything to her about it." I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous how to be a husband. This program is made for me to work, not my wife. My wife was not an alcoholic. So it ain't up to her to work the 12 steps. It's up to me to change. Then we had a kid, and I don't know how to treat kids. Kids cry. They make messes. They break things. They crap in their diapers. No human being should do that. That's just how kids ought to be born, 12-year-old and potty trained. That's what I think. And so I'd shake her and I'd throw her in the crib and she'd cry, and then the wife and I, and then she's crying and we're having that cuss fight, and I feel the guilt and shame of being a bad father, and the only thing that'll take the feelings of that away is a couple of shots of whiskey. And then my head says, it's just teaching that kid discipline, that's all. You see, my head allowed me to lie to me when I drank. And then I got called into the CO's office one day, and they issued me a rifle with a telescope on it, live ammunition, and sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. Vietnam is... I'll tear that up. I swear to God, I will. No, I won't. I was kidding. I'm not like that. Yes, I am. I'm lying to you. But they sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. Vietnam's not my problem. It's never been my problem. My problem was I got there at 67, 68. I'm a sniper. I'm up at Khe Sanh and Kantien, and I'm full of fear, and I can't tell anybody about that fear. I feel like a wimp. I'm ashamed of that, and I can't tell anybody about it. And I found out a secret in Vietnam. 151 proof rum in my canteens. I drink that, I'm bulletproof and invisible. Now what I can do is go out on those patrols with those guys and show them what a macho guy I am, do the things I think I have to do to show everybody how tough I am and what a man I am. And I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people over there. I'm not proud of that. That's where alcohol allows me to go when I drink. And what I found out when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous is all I have is right now, and if I can put enough nows together, I'll have a sober tonight. I can never put enough nows together to go back and change my past. I can't undo any of the things I've done. What I can do today is not shut the door on them. What I can do today is try not to treat people the way I used to treat them, try not to act the way I used to act, try not to react to every perception or thought that I have. And I tell you, I don't know. I'm not a decent human being because I'm over 24 years sober. I just got to be honest with you. I'm not a good man today. You know, I hear old-timers stand at these podiums in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and they stand up there and tell me how wonderful they are, and that they're just walking with God about a foot off the ground. It's beautiful to watch, if you can ever see them. They're about a foot off the ground. They're beautiful. You know, they're never late to work. They don't swear. They never have bad thoughts. They don't yell at their kids. They don't cuss. They don't do anything. They're just wonderful. They're sober and wonderful. And when I was new, I used to look at them and listen and think, I can never get there. I don't think I can stay here because I can't get that beautiful and wonderful. And it used to scare me that I couldn't stay in AA. And I'm not a good father today because I'm over 24 years sober. I'm not a good man today. I'm not going to kid you. I'm still intense. You can't tell that. And I gotta tell you, you hear people stand at these podiums and say, I'm a completely different person than when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. That is such bullshit, I can't even believe that. I am exactly the same person that came to Alcoholics Anonymous 24 years, 9 months and change ago. I am exactly the same person. What I try to do today is not act the way I used to act. What I try to do today is not do the things I used to do. What I try to do today is apply the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life so I'm comfortable outside these rooms and don't do the things I used to do. But it's like Johnny H. says that the lion's in the cage, but the cage is closed, but it's unlocked. And you scratch that scab and you'll bleed. You see, I'm a human being. And my sponsor told me, he said, you don't have to be what this group wants you to be. You have to find out who you are and what you are and be able to accept it and start working on it. You've got to find out who and what you are, see? And if you're new, I got to tell you, you don't have to be what these people want you to be. You have to find out who you are and what you are and be able to start working on it and accept that. Now, what I've done with all the good things and bad things that's happened in my life, I have never changed my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is absolutely the first thing in my life. Nothing comes before AA. And as a result of that, is that a cell phone? Has it got speakerphone on it? Because when we put it in your butt, you'd be able to yell at them and tell them, it's on speakerphone. It shouldn't have been on in the meeting. Well, how do you like me so far? Stop it. See, there's no reason to have a cell phone on in a meeting unless you're an organ transplant surgeon. And you got to dash off to the hospital to transplant a heart or a liver. Oh, I guess I got to start over. I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. I forgot where I was. God, I love it. But I'm a lot better man and dad and husband today than I was 24 years ago. And hopefully tomorrow I'll be a little bit better than I was today. And I'm just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that has the same emotions and feelings I had when I got here. You see, I still got lust and greed and sloth and laziness. And I'd lie to you if I didn't have to make amends. And I'd steal from you if I didn't have to give it back and make amends. And I'm that same person. I just don't react to those things today. I'm just telling you the truth. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just being honest with you. I don't want to stand up here and lie to you and give you the newcomer's false hope that they're going to turn wonderful in AA. Because you just become a human being. And I'm glad of that. You see, I ended up getting wounded over in Vietnam and during the siege at Khe Sanh. I come back to the States and I go home and we'd had a son born to us while I was over there and my daughter's growing up. And, you know, I got to get out in the bars and talk about the war and we're having that cuss fight again. And I finally tell her to shut up or I'll kill you. And that woman don't believe me. And so I go in the closet and I get the gun out that I had left home with her. And I walk back in that kitchen and I tell her, if you don't shut up, I'll shoot you. I will kill you if you don't shut up. And my daughter's pulling on my pants, telling me don't shoot her mommy. And we're yelling and screaming. We're both drinking. And I told you I didn't believe in God when I got here. And the old-timers told me there's always been a God in my life. And when I look back over my life, you see, I can see that's true today. I always have had a higher power in my life. And I'm a very blessed man for that. You see, I tried to get the safety off that gun, and it was rusted. I hit a pin at the base of the receiver, and I pushed that pin back in, and it was a firing pin, and that gun went off. And the bullet went through my hand and down between my legs where my daughter was standing. And the bullet didn't hit her. You see, I could have accidentally shot and killed my daughter that day in a drunken rage because my wife wouldn't do what I was trying to tell her to do because I'm boss. You see, I'm macho. And she divorced me shortly after that. I couldn't believe it. I fired one shot. I shot myself and she split. She took my kids. I thought I was a good father. You see, I drank over that. And I became a drill instructor in San Diego, and I, when the recruits left their stuff out, I stole it and teach them a lesson, and I hazed them and abused them, and I fought in the bars in San Diego. I carried a gun, and after about 2.5 years as a drill instructor, I had that macho thought again, and what I did is I volunteered and went back to Vietnam for a second tour. I was in the infantry this time, and all I did is repeat my bad actions from the first time, and I did a lot of bad things over there. And, again, alcohol saved my sanity over there, and I'm not proud of those things. I ended up getting wounded in an ambush again. I got shot up, and I come back to the States, and after 11 years active duty, the Marine Corps wants me to come back out after lunch. I can't do that. I have to drink now to keep the demons away. And so I got out of the Marine Corps after 11 years active duty. I did what macho guys were doing. I became a police officer in Southern California. Exactly. Freeze! I love saying that. That gets me hot. And, you know, I never said freeze to anybody when I was a cop. I hate that phrase. I can't tell my partner in the police car I'm afraid of the dark. I can't tell my partner in the police car that there's demons in that alley that if we go down there, they'll get me. He knows I'm a Vietnam vet. He knows I'm not afraid of anything. So before I go to work, I drink and it takes the fear away. Now what happens when I go on the streets is if you scare me, I get violent. I was a violent police officer in the city I worked in. I'm not proud of that today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to go into Chino and Wayside and these institutions. Once in a while, I speak in there, and I make my amends in there, and I tell those guys what I'm trying to be like today. And I try not to act the way I used to act and treat people the way I used to treat them. I'm not always successful at that. I got to tell you that. You know, I got married again, and we had a kid, and then my wife got pregnant again. And I don't feel like a man. I still got to be validated. And so I started to have an affair with my partner. My partner's a female. I have a female partner, and her and I are having an affair. And she found out I got my wife pregnant. She took offense to that, and she shot me. And what the hell are you laughing at? If anybody's dating that woman right there, if she has a gun and you make a mistake with her, she will cap your ass. I'm going to tell you that right now. She will shoot you. If any woman in this meeting you're dating and they're laughing and they have a weapon, enough said, they will shoot you. I'm telling you right now. She shot me in the head, and I thought rather than get gunned down in a police car, I'd resign. And so I got a real estate license. And if you think money, property, and prestige will fix it, if you're an alcoholic of my type, money doesn't fix it. Money doesn't fix alcoholism. Money doesn't fix rage. Money doesn't fix guilt and shame and lying and cheating and stealing. Money does not fix alcoholism, because I'm sure there's people in here with a ton of money, but they're still sitting in this meeting. Money doesn't fix it, and I made a ton of money in real estate. I bought a brand new Cadillac. I paid cash for that damn car. I bought my wife one and paid cash. I own part of a strip mall. I own rentals up at Tahoe, a piece of land. We put a house on a quarter acre, swimming pool, three-hole putting green. My kids wore designer clothes. I wore custom suits. I had diamond pinky rings, gold nugget bracelets, gold chains. I had a Mr. T starter tip for who's ever on TV. I never stooped so low, though, as to wear an earring. I never did that. So, but I had all this stuff, and it didn't fix the alcoholism. It didn't fix the abuse in the family. It didn't fix fighting in the bars. It didn't fix the stealing. It didn't fix the drinking and the puking and the raising of hell. It didn't fix anything. And at the age of 36, I stood there and I looked around, and everything I'd worked all my life to get was gone. All I've ever wanted to do all my life is be like my father. He was a decent man. He provided a good home. He had respect. Everybody loved him. He was just a good man. I wanted to be. I don't know where in the hell I went wrong. And to this day, over 24 years sober, I can tell you this. To this day, I have never felt inside how my father looked to me. I have never felt how my dad looked. Now, I can't explain that. I just haven't. But that's what I wanted to do all my life, is be like my dad. And at the age of 36, I stood there and looked around, and everything I owned was gone. Everything I owned was in a cardboard box in the back seat of a stolen car. And that's a hell of a note for a former police officer. And I ended up homeless. I ended up on the streets. I ended up passing blood when I went to the bathroom. I got very sick. A woman I worked real estate with seen me one day. She took me to her home, cleaned me up, and took me to a doctor. And that doctor gave me a physical, and they turned me loose, and I went back out to doing what I was doing, and she found me when they got the results and took me back in there, and that doctor set me down, and he said, Mr. Jones, he said, I got to tell you, he says, you're addicted to alcohol the way a heroin addict is to heroin, and if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die before summer. He says, you got a hole in your throat from vomiting all the time, you got cirrhosis of the liver, you have a stomach infection, you have all the things you're going to have and accumulate when you're living and eating and drinking the way I am. And when that man told me I was going to die, what I felt was relief because I was tired. It's hard walking through people's lives. It's hard doing the things I was doing. And I shook that man's hand. I left his office, and the money that woman gave me to eat on, I bought a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer, and I drank as hard and as fast as I could because if drinking was going to kill me, I wanted to die. To make a long story short, my parents found out I was dying on the streets and wouldn't take care of myself, and my parents had me committed. And if I could have got out of the restraints, I'd have went home and talked to them about it. Because I hadn't spoke to them in almost 4 years. And I was strapped down in that hospital, and they pumped me full of vitamin B and magnesium to help with the withdrawals. And some of them I remember, and some of them I don't. I remember some of the cramps and the sweats, and I seen some little things flying around the room and wanted an exterminator to come in, but they wouldn't get one for me. And when 10 or 11 days had passed, they unstrapped me from that bed, put me in a van, and sent me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know why. I'm not an alcoholic. It's the only disease in the world that's killing you, and your head will always blame something else. And when I got to that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a bunch of losers there, just like you people. You're doing the same things you were doing tonight. Nothing's changed. Anybody in here with time more than me knows that. The same thing is still going on. Everybody's hugging and kissing and shit. They're shaking hands and then singing happy birthday. And, you know, all the women have their makeup on and their hair done and they all look nice and the guys are all clean and everybody looks bright and alive. And what I did is I judged you. I know nobody here judges anybody, but I judged you people. And I looked at you and I realized you couldn't possibly look as good as you look if you'd lived the life I lived and ended up on the streets. You couldn't have done the things I did in Vietnam or to two wives and four kids and be this way. And what you guys told me was, Frank, get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. And I thought, I'll rip your throat out. And you said, no, there's too many of us. You ain't going to rip anything. Shut up and sit down. Keep your mouth shut during the meeting. Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. If you want to take a drink of alcohol, come to Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't have to drink. Go to 90 meetings, 90 days. I heard that over and over and over. And I left that meeting and I hated you. And I had to be brought back the next night and I looked at you and I realized something. You people hadn't made the money I made. You didn't have the cars, the jewelry, the clothes. You didn't have any of that stuff. And you guys looked at me and said, Frank, you ain't got any of that shit now. You're homeless. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. How many times do we have to tell you, shut up and sit down? Go to 90 meetings, 90 days. Come to AA if you want to take a drink. And I got to tell you, what happened to me might happen to you if you do not plug into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Because we're playing You Bet Your Life. And if you don't plug into Alcoholics Anonymous, get yourself a sponsor, not somebody to talk to you about your issues. Your issues will change every 4 or 5 seconds. Get a sponsor that's going to put you in this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, get you committed to these meetings, and give something back to the meetings rather than just sucking the life out of it and leaving, like a lot of people do. They're too busy and too important to pick a chair up. They're too busy to pick up a broom or a mop or a trash can or a coffee pot or a coffee cup that's been discarded or cigarette butts outside. They're too important, too macho, and too cool. So what they do is they come here and suck the life out of it and walk away. And if you're one of those, hopefully we'll be here when you get back. But if you're an alcoholic of my type, what happened to me might happen to you if you don't get a sponsor. Find your higher power, get in these meetings, have respect for AA and give something back instead of just being a taker. What happened to me might happen to you. I walked out of that hospital, I stood out there in that sun in Indiana and I started crying. And all the things I had done all my life came down and started sitting on my chest. And I was sober as I am right now. all the things I did in Vietnam and the two wives and four kids when I was a cop and the shoplifting as a kid choking me out. I didn't want to take a drink of alcohol. I have not had a desire to take a drink in over 24 years and 9 months. I had a desire to commit suicide. Where do you go when you want to take your own life? Where do you go when you get sober and you have no hope? Where do you go when you look down that tunnel and there's no light at the end of that tunnel? Where do you go when you don't have a sponsor to talk to give you that hope and that strength to keep going when the desperation's setting in, when the anxiety's there, when the rage is there, when things aren't going right around you and nobody's doing anything your way, and you want to take your own life? Where do you go when you feel that way? What happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this deal called AA. I came back to California, found my wife and kids in Oregon, moved into a vacant garage in a 6-acre field. We slept on the floor of that garage, ate out of a styrofoam chest. My kids put water on their cereal. We ate government cheese and block bologna. I did not go to AA. My wife and kids said I got a lot worse then than I ever was drinking. You see, it's 6 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings. I'm driving a stolen car on the Hollywood Freeway with a 45. I'm looking for work. You see, I need a job. And I'm honking at this guy in the fast lane to get out of my way because I got places to go. And I'm honking and he ain't getting out of the way. Now maybe you folks here in San Jose just are serene. You maybe just pull around him and wave at him and go on about your business. Well, you see, I'm not like that, see. And I rear-ended him. And I chased him off the freeway. And when he stopped his car, I stopped mine. I got out of the car, took that 45 and I put it in the window of his car and I pointed it at him and I said, if you ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you. Now, you see, I didn't want a pina colada that day. I wanted to take that man's life. Where do you go when you're that full of rage? Where do you go when you don't have a sponsor to call and ease that pressure off in your head? Where do you go when your stomach's just full of nails and it's grinding? You haven't made a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous that you can call and talk to help ease back. Where do you go if you have none of that? No higher power to turn it over to. No belief or trust or faith in anything. 10 months without a drink of alcohol. No meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing. I'm standing in Alpha Beta buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. You don't think I'm going to buy my children milk for their cereal, do you? I'm a taker. I've been a taker all my life. I'm selfish. I'm always going to get mine first. I'm never going to make sure my children get anything until I got mine. And I'm standing there and the sign says, 10 items or less, cash only. My head's back with me, talking to me and chattering, and my head said, count that woman's items. So I count her items, and she's got about 13 items in this 10-item line. Now, maybe here in San Jose, that don't bother you people. Maybe you're serene with crap like that going on. And I'm a thinker. I don't know about you, but I got to analyze everything. It ain't just what's on the surface. It's 12 eggs, 12 items. Or is it just eggs? If she's got 2 half gallons of milk, is that milk or 2 more items? If she's got 4 apples in a little chinchy bag, is that 4 items? Or is that just apples? And I'm standing there going crazy. And I'm ready to launch. I don't know about you, but I can't back anger down. And I'm standing there and I'm mad and she's broke her checkbook out. I said, lady, you can't write a check in this line. It says cash. And she turned and smiled and said, I'll be through in a minute, Sonny. I said, my name ain't Sonny. I said, I'm not Sonny this instant, lady. And I said, you're not writing a check in this damn line. And I grabbed her eggs and milk. I threw that shit all over Alpha Beta as far as I could throw it. That will get 4 large sheriffs called on you. They will want to know if you're drunk. I didn't want a bourbon and water right then. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. I hated her. That probably won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. You're a lot more macho and you have more willpower and stuff than me. You have more discipline. Don't worry about it. 13 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings. I don't need AA. I don't need a sponsor telling me what to do. I don't need 12 steps. I'm Catholic. I'm trying to get a job in this office and this guy walks by me and said, hey Frank, how you doing? I said, that's a personal question. Why are you prying into my private life? I said, I'll tell you how I'm doing. I don't want anybody else to hear this crap. And I grabbed him by the throat, pulled him on the desk. I started choking him, saying, how do you think I'm feeling now? I had a nervous breakdown. That won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. You're a lot stronger than me. I got to tell you how God worked in my life when I don't believe in God. There's an active member of my home group. The only time he'd ever been in there, they pulled my fingers off this guy's throat, and he laid a card down, and he said, I know what's wrong with you. He said, I can't help you. You got to talk to this guy. And they took me back and sat with me in the garage for about 9 or 10 days, and I cried, and I don't remember those days at all. And then they took me down and set me in this guy's office, and I sat in his office, and I cried. And what that man told me that day has saved my life and my sanity up to and including tonight. This is what he told me. He said, Frank, he said, you haven't had a drink in over 13 months. He said, right this minute, he said, drinking ain't your problem. He said, what you've got right now is a living problem, and you need to find a living answer to that living problem. And he says, you'll find it in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had never heard that before. He said, when you go to those meetings, he said, there's a group of people who walked down that path before you got there. Fall in behind them and do the things they're doing. He didn't tell me to bring the body and the mind to follow. That is such horse crap. Your mind ain't going to follow you anywhere, okay? The book says this is an action program. It means you got to do something in it. If you think you can just sit here and get it by thinking about it, go home tonight, get in your garage, think about being a Ford or a Chevy. If you turn into one, come over to the hotel, I'll honk your horn. Come on. The program is an action program. You got to do something. He told me I had to get commitments in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. A commitment means you show up unless there's a death in the family and it's yours. I understand that. He told me to come in and sit in the front and listen. Told me to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. He told me to shut up, have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me to give something back to the meeting. Don't just suck the life out of it. Don't get up and wander around during the meeting. He said, everybody knows you're there. Everybody knows you're a newcomer. We can tell who you are. He says, put your butt in the chair and have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. It ain't about you. I commend Alcoholics Anonymous, and you people showed me how to live. You showed me how to treat my family. You showed me how to treat my children because I didn't know how. He told me to go home and tell my wife and kids I loved them. And I said, I'd be lying to them. I don't even know who they are. And you said, well, you've lied to them 10 years, lie to them some more. And so I did. I went home and told my wife and kids I loved them. And I didn't love them. I just told them over and over, day after day and week after week. And one day I walked in and told them I loved them. And something funny happened. I loved them. They changed. I don't even know what program they'd been going to. And what I got out of that evolution right there, see, it doesn't matter what my sponsor or the old-timers in my home group tell me to do. I don't have to think about doing it. I don't have to think it'll work. I don't have to believe it'll work. I don't have to want to do it. I just got to get off my butt and go do it. And when I do that, what happens is I feel better. Whatever I've been told in Alcoholics Anonymous to do has enriched my life and helped make me a better person. I've never been told anything to do in AA by anybody with time or my sponsor that's hurt me. I've never been told to do anything that's hurt me. Everything I've been told to do in AA has benefited me. As a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a relationship with my kids today. My oldest daughter is an attorney for a medical corporation. She did that in spite of me, not because of me. I'm not a good father. But I learned to stay out of her life. And we had AA and Al-Anon in the house. I was married into my other wife and my middle daughter. She's got a master's degree. She teaches fifth grade. And she did that in spite of me, not because of me. And last time I spoke up here, my youngest daughter was going to be a veterinarian. And she got her bachelor's degree. And she said, Dad, I don't want to do that. She said, I don't want to go to school 3 or 4 more years. And I said, all right, Beth, what do you want to do? And she said, I want to be a police officer. I almost shit. I could not believe my ears. And she's on LAPD. She just finished her 17th week in LAPD Academy, and she's third in her class. She's ahead of most of the bozo guys. And she shot the combat course last Thursday, and she finished first. And I'm proud of my daughters. And she did that in spite of me, not because of me. And I support her. And my son, like a lot of you know, he spent 13 years in prison. And he's a violent, angry alcoholic. I don't know where in the hell he got that from. And you guys and my sponsor and Johnny always told me that he'll get AA in his God's time, not my God's time. And next month he'll have 5 years sober. And he's off parole and probation. He's a plumber. Shit, don't clap for him. Hell, he's worse than me. And he found out he couldn't make it in AA. He's in NA because he couldn't relate to one alcoholic talking to another. He's a drug addict. And he could never stay sober in AA. And he ends up in NA, and he's doing great. He's got a sponsor, and he's going to the NA meetings, and he's going to have 5 years. I'm proud of him. And he's a good young man. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. And bad things happen. My dad died when I was 9 years sober. And 2 years ago, my brother, who got sober in my house and had 17 years, 10 months sober, got a rare disease, and he died. And I love my brother, but I just came to more meetings. 4 days later, my mom died. You know, that's part of life. We get older and things happen and we die. And I just came to more meetings and got my strength and my hope from you people. And I still go to 5 meetings a week. And I have commitments at those meetings. And I do Alcoholics Anonymous because it keeps this quiet. I ended a 31-year marriage. There wasn't a big deal about it. We sit down and talked and we'd grown apart. And we didn't even have an attorney. And when we dissolved the marriage and I gave her everything, and I took the bills. And my sponsor said, "Well, that's noble, but you're stupid." And, but that's what I thought I had to do, and that's what I did. And it's not because I'm a good man. It's because I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to give in order to get. That's all. And I spent 2.5 years unemployed in AA at 14 years sober and lost everything. Home, car, credit cards, good credit, lost it all. And I can't file bankruptcy. My sponsor said, "You made the bills, you're paying the bills." And I had making looking for a job a job, and I ended up in the profession I'm in today, and I make a good living, and I caught up on the bills, and life is good. And then I met a girl on my job, and she didn't even know what AA was, and then she went to hear me speak, and she said, "Did they write that down for you and have you say that, or did you really do those things?" And I said, "Well, I did them in a general way." And You set that woman's house on fire? I said, "Well, yeah." I said, "I won't set yours on fire." 23 years sober. And her and I dated for over a year, and then we got married last December. Our anniversary date is 12/12. I told her I'll never forget our anniversary date. And she loves Alcoholics Anonymous. She met my sponsor, Clancy. She met Johnny and a bunch of people in my home group, and she said, "They're so nice." She thinks Clancy and Johnny are nice. I told her, I said, "No, they're assholes, okay?" And she said, "Oh, don't say that about them. They're really nice. I like them." And Clancy gave her away at our wedding, and she said, "If you don't think they're nice," she said, "why don't you just stop and think about what they've done for you?" Got me there. And so she's a smart woman, and I'm a blessed man, and we have a good life today, and I have a good life today. And it's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because of me or I'm a good man or anything. It's because of AA and what I've been forced to do in AA and what I've had to do in AA and the very fortunate circumstances I've had to be in AA around the people I've been around. And they pull my covers and they tell me the truth. They'd rather see me sober than have me like them. And I'm very blessed for that. And if you're new or used tonight, you don't have to remember anything I've said because it's not important to anybody up here in San Jose. I only needed to remember what I used to be like and what happened and how very lucky I am to have the life I have today. I'm a blessed man. And I'm not a miracle. Alcoholics Anonymous is a miracle. But I'm a result of AA and these 12 steps and my sponsor. So if you're new or used, I think the only thing you should remember was read to you tonight out of Chapter 5. And that very first line of Chapter 5 says it all. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thanks for having me, folks.
I would like to thank our readers, Sheila and Chris, and a very special thanks to Frank for being our speaker. You may thank the speaker in front of the